board. You have a lot of fun material today. Let me...
Do I owe Eitan an apology?
No, I don't think you owe an apology. Why do you owe an apology?
I kind of lost my temper.
I'll tell
it's
you.
Okay. I lost my temper. It's okay. I lost my temper at Sora Bamari last night too.
I'll say, give him an apology the next time he's in Kabura.
All right. That was mean. All right. Fine. All right,
we have to start figuring out the empty set. You know what happens? What happens with the empty set? All right. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of fun stuff today. And basically the theme that I want to pick up with is what came up in the last few Chaburas. Noah and Zachariah did a good job teasing this out. This recurring theme of the intermingled property rights of the Yoreid and the Baal HaSadeh. And what I want to take a closer look at today is the extent to which we really view the Yoreid as being a shutaf, as having like real bona fide ownership or property claims in the shevach of the field of the Baal HaBayis. Now, you know, as we saw last time, it's not a trivial argument one way or the other. On the one hand, it's the karka of the Baal HaSadeh. So you could say that anytime you trespass into his domain, there's like a kinyan chutz there that the Baal HaSadeh has, which swallows up all the shevach and gives him the ownership of the shevach, etc. But on the other side, as Zachariah was arguing last time, look, it's the materials of the Yoreid, it's the labor of the Yoreid. So it's really this open question, you know, whether we favor one person's property claim over the other, or whether we're going to view them as joint shutfin over the benefit, over the improvement, the appreciation. So we saw a few indications of this intermingled property right already. You know, one indication was this question brought up by the machlokes between the Nesivis and the Raivin Nishin Kubetzes about whether the Yoreid has a special claim to the building that he built. So like if the Baal HaSadeh is not paying him, does he have some special right to live in the building that he built or improved for the Baal HaSadeh? This same tension seems to be evident in the question of like Eitzai V'Avanai Aninotel. Does the Yoreid have a right to just say, hey, I'm taking back my materials if you're not going to pay me for them? Does he retain some sort of ownership claim over the improvement that he made? So let me just mention a few sources now that I think really bring this idea to the foreground. And I'll try to be a little more explicit about the underlying conceptual explanation for it as well. So to start us off today, I want to go back to one point I gestured at in the beginning of the week. Remember, we saw the Gemara in Kuf Aleph says that one reason or one consideration blocking the Poel, the Yoreid, from saying Eitzai V'Avanai Aninotel is Kachsha Da'ara, right? That he's going to cause some harm to the Baal HaBayis's property. The Baal HaBayis's property already sustained the Netios, whatever. Rashi here said, Shekvar Hekhishu HaNetios HaSadah Shiyankum Imenu. So I mentioned that the Achronim have this question. You can see the Birch HaShmuel in Baba Basra has it. You know, it's always fun to open our Baruch Be'er. Can't say it's fun to struggle with like what he's trying to say always, but it's certainly fun to crack open the book. And Baruch Be'er says, let's see. In a Sadasu Yalita, you can't say Eitzai V'Avanai Aninotel. Okay. Kamosha Piresh Chaim, you know, I'm not gonna unpack all the Zatzuk Lalas. So as Reb Chaim said in Bamitzia, the Vesada ain't shalom la mikum mishim kachsha da'ara. And the Gemara says that. Vishalu mimenu, so they asked Reb Chaim, demabekach ishalim ahezek. Why can't the Yoreid just say, why can't he say Eitzai V'Avanai Aninotel? And just pay off the kachsha da'ara damage to the Baal HaSadeh, make the Baal HaSadeh whole. Upiresh mori v'rabi da shevach shel Baal HaKarkahu. So the reason is that like the Baal HaKarka already has some property claim, right? It's not enough to just make him just pay off the kechesh ara. The reason why you can't say it's Aravan Aniotel is because the Baal HaKarka already has Bailos over it. Pirish. Deve emes ha-shevach shel Baal HaKarka, midin ara yishbach. So the Baal HaBayis is kone, the improvement of the yored. Vehu dinase shutaf imo. Pretty interesting. And I think he means that the yored has become a shutaf with the Baal HaSadeh in the Shevach. It's like the Yored can't compel Lukas a Chaluka because that would be causing extra harm to the Baal Asada. So what I just want to say here is you get this very nice formulation that the Yored and the Baal Asada are considered Shutfin in the improvement. And that's why one party can't compel Chaluka on the other. So we have some hands here. Let's see. Dan, you have a hand?
Yes. So I, if this is the logic we're employing, why would it only apply to Sada? Why can't, like, are you saying it's not specific to like the actual, like, technical kachsha da'ara? It's more just like, oh, the Baal, now the Baal HaBayis and the Yored are shutfin, and that should equally apply if he builds a gazebo. Like, yeah, now we're shutfin in that. And
I think our Baruch Bear, you know, according to Chaim, agrees to that they're shutfin in all cases. But in one case, you could compel Chaluka, I guess, if, like, it's easily divisible. Well, the reason why you can't compel Chaluka here is because there's some element of additional mazik. So he's thinking that, like, it's a rule of shutfin. It's a rule of shutfin that you can't compel chaluka when you're causing extra harm. You can't just pay off the shutif that extra difference.
Mm-hmm.
You see that? But
we're saying that it's, but then it comes back. So we're saying that
in all cases, you would view them as shutfin.
Yeah.
The difference between the cases is when could you compel chaluka.
But that last line there, it seems like the fact that there should fin eino yachal litol itzav davana,
well, dimazik, right?
Yeah.
Because through taking away the itzav avanim is causing extra harm.
But then, so why do we have to, if it's about hezek, why do we have to invoke, like, you're not just allowed to do damage and then pay it off. Like, so
right, that's why the shidduf can compel the, that's why the Yored can't compel the Baal HaSadeh to divide it.
So, but even absent any sort of shutfin thing, you could just say, like, when you take out your tree, you're doing hezek. So, sorry, the tree's got to stay there, even without any sort of shutfin in the you could say, like, I have no claim to the tree.
Oh, I see.
It would be damaging my field.
I guess the underlying assumption here is that if the Yored retained full title over the Shevach, you know, maybe we wouldn't view him as a mazik if he's just taking back what's his, and there's a little nezek as a byproduct.
Like grammar or something?
Something like that. But Reb Chaim's point here is that the Yored never has full title over the improvement that he made because he becomes a shutif along with the Baal HaKarka in it.
Yeah. All right.
Good. Adam?
Oh, I was basically going to make the comment that you got to in the end. But I'm still thinking there are still two things that are interesting. One is, why is this limited to the case of Hasiolita? Theoretically, it should apply also in any Hasiolita, just because you're taking away that sort of the nutrients from the ground. The other idea I was thinking of is this idea of mazik in this case, in the shutfus. It's not just, it seems to me not only that the idea is that, you know, you're actually affecting the status of the land, but the benefit that leaves the land is what's going into the netiyot, right? It's just being exchanged, not just that you're causing damage, but since that very damage is what creates the benefit, by definition, that's right now your benefit. Now the value that you had is now something that belongs to someone else, like physically.
You're saying it's like the Baal Ha'etzim would be benefiting, like, inappropriately from the kechesh ara of the Baal HaSadeh.
Exactly. Right, yeah. So it's not fully comparable to a gazebo. Like, even a gazebo directly harms the land, still that benefit didn't go straight into, you know, the physical gazebo itself.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. It's an interesting point. Like the reverse problem now that the Yoraid will be Nana from the Baal Sades, Kakashara.
Right.
So I want to look at now. So I want to take a closer look now at this argument that the Yoraid is considered like a Shutaf, and he has some of these like real Kinyanim in the Nichse or in the Chatzer of the Baal Sade. And there's some really fun makoros here that we're gonna get to. So just I want to take 2 minutes to reinforce the paradigm of this idea. I know I've spoken about it outside, but this idea of uman konabish vach kli. This I think is like one of the clearest places in halacha where you get just a really crisp formulation of one party gaining an affirmative property right in somebody else's thing through creating increased value, through appreciating the value of the thing. So you have here the Gemara in Kiddushin Mem Chasam Abayz, Machlokas about Uman Kona Bishvach Kli, Mar Savar Kona Bishvach Kli, Mar Savar In Kona Bishvach Kli. Rashi here just has a very nice gloss on that Machlokas. And Rashi explains, when you bring your Kli to an Uman, to an artisan, Kishem Mashbicho, the Osem Min HaZahav Kli, Kona Lizkos Bichli Kishehu Mashbicho. Right, what's happening is here is that when he is mashbiach the kli, he takes your gold and he turns it into a nice ring or whatever. He crafts it into a new thing. So the question is, does he gain some property rights in it? And Rashi here says, if you hold uman kona bishvach kli, then masha mashbiach eno milve ala bailim. It's not just that you owe the worker for his labor, but he gains like a real property right in the kli. What's happening actually is that the original owner of the materials is actually purchasing the property right of the artisan that the artisan acquired through his improvement in the thing itself. So every improvement of goods, you bring your suit to the tailor on this view, is actually a kinyan, an acquisition, a creation of a property right by the laborer, by the artisan, which is then sold to the original owner of the materials, allowing him to buy back the artisan's property claim, property interest. Does everybody see that? That's you get a very nice formulation of Rashi in this sugya. You can see here, you get the same from Rashi in Bava Metzia. That was Rashi in Kiddushin, Bava Metzia Kuf Yud Beis. The Gemara has this question of Uman Kona Bishvach Kli, because the Gemara wants to know whether there's an Isser Bal Tullin and not paying an artisan on time. And Rashi here says, Uman Kona Bishvach Kli, Vizoche bimasha hespicho, ukishemachzirolo haru kemochelo shavach shahayilo bizocho. So you get the same formulation in Rashi in both cases. It's a very crisp gloss on this theory. Anybody have questions on just the brute theory of Uman Kona Bishvach Kli, how Rashi explains it, that this is a real property interest that the mashbiach has in the thing, which is then sold back to the original violin? Everybody okay with this? In Kiddushin, the nafkamina is whether the Uman could use it for a Kiddushin, right? So that's like the question of what kind of property right he has. But everyone clear with the paradigm? Gabe, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, just to clarify, when in Rashi's position, do you think the Uman is Kona, the original raw material? Like who owns the
Bala Chorva's 18 Vavanim,
so to speak.
Yeah. I think Rashi thinks the property interest of the Uman is in the Shevach, right? So it's not that we're not talking about ownership of like the whole thing, you know? He's thinking, let's see. Well, here, the Rashi in Kiddushin is a little less clear. He says, Ela bikli hu zoche. Does that mean he has an interest in the kli or that he acquires the kli? And maybe when Rashi here says Haru Kamukolo, he's selling the kli. But Rashi in Bava Metzia, I think, is more precise. He said, Uman Kona Bishvach Kli, I think he means he acquires like his marginal contribution.
I don't think.
Shevach shahayelo b'socho. Go ahead.
I think that there's another way to read Rashi that I think is maybe slightly less intuitive. Just put it out there. I think this Rashi, the Rashi no Matira, it could be the Zocha b'masha shpicho means that what the kinyan, like the actual Maisa kinyan, is that he was mashpiachet and not that he's kona, right? And that's why it says the Zocha. And the way
right, you're saying like the bima is like through via.
Yeah, exactly. Through the, like that's the apparatus of kinyan.
The method of the kinyan, not the object of the kinyan.
And how do you explain Mokhelo Shevach Shailo B'Sofa?
It's because that's why the guy doesn't have to pay him back for the entire thing. It's because he probably owes the person money for his kinyan, right? It's not like you give me the zav and I make a kli and now you have to pay me for the entirety of the value of the kli, right? Like you had an investment. And if in this like conception of the Uman being kona the entire thing, presumably owes you money or something, and so when he sells it back, he's mocher lo.
Interesting. So it's like the net accounting.
Yeah, I agree that it's slightly that's what makes it hard, the end of Rashi. But I think it's like you're trying to have a coherent theory of Rashi throughout Shas. It's probably helpful.
I hear that. Yeah, that's a nice suggestion. In the Kedushin Sugi, you know, the Ketzos and the Ketzos has all this question of your corner, the whole Kli, the Achronim do get into that question. For me, I'm much more interested right now just in the paradigm of, you know, the Mashbiach gains this property right in the thing. And I don't think we have to take a stance right now for our purposes, whether it's owning the entire thing or just having some indeterminate interest in the value, right, up to the value of your improvement in the thing. Or right, we're not trying to figure out. Yeah, go ahead, Cole.
Do you see this as parallel to the Kenyan conception of the zchus socher, of the right of the worker to eat the grapes, meaning like your contribution to their transition from, you know, from being plant, you know, attached to the ground to being, you know, usable produce might affect some kind of property right. Do you see this as a similar intuition?
Yeah, you could definitely. Remember when we were doing the Achilas Polem Sugya, one suggestion, we didn't really find like strong support for it, like in the Sugya itself, but certainly like as a theoretical interpretation, I agree with it, that like the Lockean paradigm, like the laborer, you know, through his labor is kona some entitlement to the stuff that he's producing, the Gemar Malacha. Right, Cole?
Something like that.
And that was like the reverse, you know, kind of leaned into that direction about, you know, the Torah splits the property right between the Poel and the Bias. He didn't connect it to the labor, but I think for sure you might think that it's this kind of a theory that underlies the Achilas Poem. So yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, like, between these two Rashis and Bava Metzia and the earlier one, that, like, again, if, like, Schutzing want to, like, less in the interest of establishing a coherent theory, but, like, if all we have is Rashi and Bava Metzia, my like, gut would say that, like, the halachic system works on the relationship via kinyanim. So, like, we know that, like, obviously there's a duty of the owner of the item to pay for the. So if I give you my suit, obviously I have to pay you. And we're just trying to determine, like, what actually makes me pay? Like, why do I have a chiyuv to pay you? Oh, there must be that there's some sort of kinyan happening. And, like, and the only thing there could be, like, I agree with what Shu and Cole were saying, that, like, there, like, the only thing there could be a kinyan on is the improvement that you made. But it doesn't, like, necessarily speak to some sort of deep, like, it could be that because it has to be something. Whereas the
earlier Rashi. I remember the Gemara had the other view that ein l'man kona b'shvach kli, in which case it's just standard schiros, right? It's paying for a service. So, meaning, it's not like we're forced into viewing things of like property transfers back and forth, right? The Gemara does acknowledge that enuman kona b'shvach kli is like it's l'shem schiras. Rashi even says enuman v'ariyu kishar schiras, right? I pay you for a service, which is a different paradigm.
I hear that. Yeah. So, but like the earlier, yeah. I guess that takes the teeth out of the idea of like the. Of like, because the earlier Rashi really, that's a much more, like we mentioned before, much more far-reaching implication idea of, like you said, like real Schutzfin or something like that in ownership versus like a more like I don't think we have to read that Rashi necessarily as like a real property right, but I agree. I think I'm with what you're saying that like there's another viable option. So
okay, good. Let me just say that. So I'm using this for a paradigm for our sugya about the Yoreid. The interesting question here is, do we think that the Umen Konabishvach Kli scenario is more or less obvious than the Yoreid scenario? So on the one hand, and we'll see this playing out in some of the Achronim, the Uman case is really consensual, right? So the person who owns the materials asks the Uman to make the improvement. So it's like he gives him permission to be Mashbiach. In the Yoreid case, especially in Yoreid Shalobrishus, there's no real permission that's granted, right? So you have to get over the trespass issue. Like could the labor mixing survive the border trespass into somebody else's property? And you'll see that like the intuitions could be pulled in like opposite directions, which case is better, which we'll come back to in a second. So I just want to flag it right now. Evan, did you have a comment before we get into the Zareas of the Hefker discussion?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, is there like some sort of, just sort of opposite of Kol, is there some sort of like very specific thing by an Uman that generates this sort of Kone or Kinyan centric thing as opposed to like Enuman Kone or just the idea that like this is just a Poel or, you know, just a worker?
You know, I think the difference is like why isn't every Poel considered to be like Uman Kone Bishvach Kli?
Right, pretty much.
Well, the Ravid might think that. Sorry, go ahead.
It's interesting, yeah. I would just say I'll regalachas before we get to Cole's point. I'll regalachas, I think the answer is that when you hire, this has to do with the way the halacha structures a Poel as Yad Poel Kiyad Rabo or Poel Gufo Kanoi. There you own, like you purchase his labor ex ante. And so once you purchase, and that's why like a Poel is like an Eved for a lot of things. So his labor is your labor. That would be the argument. And if his labor is like your labor, then you don't have to worry about him having any chelek in the product that he produces. That would be the argument. It's not a pure, Marxists, Zacher Osama Nashim Latov, I guess, you know, they don't like this idea that you could transfer your labor. They think that's like, there's no way to alienate it in this legal way. And that could be like what Cole is suggesting, that why Poel would still have as Chos Achila. There's something about their contribution that still entitles them to the Chelek and the outcome. But Evan, your point, just an answer to your question, I think there's a difference. Arguably, there's a difference between a Poel and an Uman, and that the Poel sells his labor up front, forfeiting his chelek in the product, whereas an Uman who owns his own labor, he puts that into the product and then has to sell the product back to the Bialim. Does that make sense?
So wouldn't the idea of Yado al Takhtona / al Yona push to the side of Uman? I'm just saying in terms of like boundaries and then...
Well, hold off. Because remember the Balamor. Remember the Balamor was...
Right, right.
...to interpret Yado al Yona, Yado al Takhtona in terms
right, of... Right, right, right.
Yeah, but that's why I think that Machlokas is very fundamental. The Balamor
Machlokas. Exactly.
Good. So I want to now take a look at another paradigm related... similar to Uman Kone Bishvach Kli, although a slightly different scenario, right? Here there's no, it's not like a consensual arrangement, but a similar idea where the halacha recognizes this notion of acquiring Shevach through your labor improvement. So we have here the Yushalmi in Maestros, Aleph Aleph. So excited that we get to learn Yushalmi Maestros a little bit. Hopefully today's a fun day. So Yushalmi says, quotes are Blazer, Hazarea Sade Hefker Chayeb Maisros. So Yishalmi always makes its pays into bays, right? So you plant a sadashal hefker, you're chayiv and meiser. Now that's really important. Why is that important? Because what's the rule generally for is hefker chayiv and meiseros? Skari, you want to tell us about it?
Yeah, produce that's hefker is pater.
That's right.
Example,
it's pater.
Also.
So what does Yerushalmi show us then if hefker is usually pater?
So must be that he owns these, at least the produce here.
Yeah, that's right. It sounds like the zoreya, the planter. You go and you plant the hefker field. He owns the produce. Now there's actually a thorny issue here. Like, does he own the karka? Kind of like Shua was suggesting, almost that, like, you know, through being mazria, through being zoreya, he acquires the karka also. Or does he just have a right in the payros, right?
Isn't that the two like approaches in the Gemara about being kona? Well, first of all, whether there are differences between being kona karka hefker and being kona like regular karka, but it's interesting to track like some different conceptions in like American law of like adverse possession type stuff, because like. It could be that if you're either you have to be mashbiachid or you have to be mekalkelet, right? Those are the two like possible ways to like be kona, right? I think. Or at least categorically.
I think for
Cole, we lost you for a second.
I think for hefker simply arka. I think that's the standard.
What's the standard?
I think for if it's hefker, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I think for hefker, the Gemara says you need a tikkun, but you need a tikkun begufa karka. You can't, meaning you can't just eat peiros.
Yeah, but it could be that you could be in the kalka like karka, like you could lean it in some way.
The point is that you need some like you need to do the equivalent of a Kenyan chazaka.
Yeah, no gather parat, right?
Yeah, no gather parat's kosher. That's usually the
right. But I thought no gather parat is it. Isn't there like some? I really have to look. I don't remember. But isn't there something where
if it's no gather parat? Because I thought the idea the Kenyan that wouldn't really apply to a hefker field though. It doesn't have a fence normally. I think the gemar right no gather parat is right. It's like the you know.
Well, it doesn't matter for our purposes. What's important here is that you do this zriya. Right, you do it in a sadeh hefker. You now have bailus over the tzvua that grows. You'll see the standard view here in the Achronim. You could see actually the Radvaz says this explicitly. The Rambam quotes this halacha in Shumos Beis Yud Aleph. Azareya sadeh hefker chayev b'tshuma maisros. So hefker is generally potter b'tshuma maisros, but zareya sadeh hefker is chayev b'tshuma maisros. And the Radvaz here in his Perush in the Rambam, hatam she'ein chiyev maisros ela min hatvua. V'hatvua eina hefker. There's actually Medjugorje, the Radvaz thinks that chi of meiser is not determined by the bailos and the karka. It's determined by bailos and the tvua. The karka may remain hefker here, but the tvua is the property of the zoreya. And that's why, turns out, very interestingly, that the karka is hefker. Sorry, the karka remains hefker, but the tvua belongs uniquely to the planter, and that's why you're pater. And the Achronim actually say that it's got to be that the karka remains hefker, or else there's no real chiddush to the Yerushalmi, right? Because the Yerushalmi would just be stating the general principle that hefker is pater mina meiser, right? You can see that. I think the Chazmish has that diak. Other Achronim have the diak here. Let's see. Yeah, the Kovachirim has the diak. Ve'im lefarei shatam da'ideiz riyaso zacha b'sada de'im kei my kamash mod b'chai b'maiser. Right? So even there's this sense in the Achronim, definitely read the Rambam this way and the Yerushalmi this way. So you have this limited property right in the tevua. So isn't that also another interesting paradigm for labor mixing and that being mashbiach gives you title to the fruits of your labor, literally the fruits of your labor, not to the karka, but to the product. So this is obviously a little different from Uman Karna Bishvach Kli, in that you're not competing with somebody else's property rights. But on the other hand, you're not really, it's not clear, is this Birshus, right? You weren't asked to do it. It's a Hefker field. Adin, you have Adin and Adam, you both have hands on this?
Yeah, so like I wonder, like pay, like what, like Uman Bishvach Kli, and like, and if I like plant a fruit tree in your backyard is one thing, but what if you hire me to just like dig a ditch or something like that, where there's no, which it complicates in the sense that there's no tangible like item that I can say I own. I've just like adjust, like would we say that the same paradigm of, like, can we really invoke the same paradigm of like I, that like I made this, so I get it. But like, so that, but like if it's purely a I don't know, a landscaping, something like some other, or I trim your tree or something like that.
Yeah.
Like
you're saying like Shevach Be'en.
Yeah, like, and versus like just an adjustment or something, like if there's no new item, but I've used my labor to yeah. Like mow the lawn or something like that.
That's it. You're saying like the fruits actually growing and the kli being transfigured, those are clear cases where there's Shevach Ben or something, and you want to know whether it applied to something where there's not, it's not as tangible, right?
Yeah.
We're going to see that in a second, actually, in the Chiddush Arim. So hold off on that thought. We're going to get to it. Good point. Adam, you have a hand?
Yeah. There's actually, in Zerayim in general, there's a particular interest that we have in terms of a person's interest in the food, in the actual tevuah. So theoretically, even if it's your field and it's your tevuah, if you don't have interest in it, then it's hefker. Like, you don't have to take mitzvahs from it. So like, theoretically, even if I came and planted on your field, you had no interest in it, I will still be the one who's chayav for mitzvahs, even though it's not my field, even though it is an owned field.
Interesting. So you want to say that maybe this Yushalmi is like a unique halacha and chayav mitzvah? Is that what you're trying to get at?
Basically, yeah.
It doesn't tell you about bailos in general?
Yeah.
It's interesting. I would say that the Achronim here seem to think, I hear your point. It's interesting, Zerayim Kiddush. We have to look into the Zerayim side of things. The Achronim here assume that this is like a general principle that you could run with. Let me give you two examples, Adam. Let me give you two examples. So, like, this Rabbi Chanan here is discussing this case in Bava Basra and Chavav about, you know, you have a tree that grows, it's like a hektish tree, but then its roots grow into hedgeot property or vice versa. You have a hedgeot tree that's roots go into hektish property. Is the tree hektish or is the tree hedgeot, right? You know, it's like a good metaphysics question, right? Not a good metaphysics question, Cole?
Metaphysics and the law are as far apart from one another as Eitan Hain and myself.
Well, you have to read that guy. Who's that guy that Aaron Siegel went after?
No, Aaron didn't go after anybody.
Yeah. The guy at Pitt, the Gush guy.
Oh, Jed Lewinson. I don't know if he's going. I think he was more going after Eli Hirsch. I don't know if he would object to Jed.
I thought Aaron Siegel, I thought this guy Jed Lewinson talks about like how all the Tanaim have all this metaphysical. He's trying. Aaron's point is you can't reconstruct the metaphysics in the legal discussions.
I think, let me put it this way. Aaron footnotes Jed. I think Aaron is more, so using
Separate discussion. Let's bracket. Yeah. Okay. So, Rabbi Chanan here just points out, interestingly, so you can see it's the Gemara wants to know, are we basar Elon as Linan or basar Karka as Linan? You know, which defines the tree status? Like the Karka that it's standing in or the roots that it's, where the roots are locked into? Or do you follow the Karka or the Elon? So Rabbi Chanan here just points out, I thought this is really interesting. He says, it sounds like in the case of the Yushalmi over there, it's pretty clear that we're not holeich basar akarka. Right? In the Yushalmi's case, right, if we were following the karka, then the tvua would be hefker. But we don't say that. We say that like the person who planted it owns the tu'a. So we don't say that the status of the tu'a follows the status of the karka. That's what's troubling Rabbi Chanan. And he actually says, maybe the difference is, he quotes this question. He says, "Beginning mamanis, azlin and basar karka." And he said, but if that's true, if you follow the Yushalmi, right, kasha from the Yushalmi, because according to the Yushalmi, kivan dazlin and basar karka im pein azrayim hefker. If we applied this rule to the Yushalmi case, then you shouldn't be chayiv in meiser. The tevuah should be hefker. So he ends up, he says, "V'tzarech tam lechalik bein karka shel hefker lebein yesh labaylin," which is interesting. He thinks that whether you go basar karka, this question is, there's a difference between cases where you're using karka shel hefker and cases where there's like conflicting ownership. Like when my ownership is competing with your ownership, then we have this question of basar karka or basar ilan azlinan. But when the karka is like maybe neutral, it's hefker, right? So maybe like it's okay for hefker to be a host. It's okay for hefker karka to be a host to someone's like particular private property without competing with it. Everybody see that? I think that's what Rabbi Chanan is getting at. I'm trying to say there's something special about using hefker stuff. Didn't you have a hand on this?
Yeah, like this doesn't seem particular. Like he seems to be perplexed by it somewhat, but it doesn't seem particularly like you could just like if I'm going into a seder shel hefker and planting grapes, like it like at the very least, like even if the grapes themselves are hefker at the moment I plant them, like I'm gonna take them and then they'll belong to me and I'll be chayav and true and meiser. But like it's so like but even without going that far, like it's much easier to say that when there's no conflicting interest. That your tent can spread wider, but when you're running up to a boundary, like we have to draw a boundary somewhere.
That's right. So he's thinking that it's easier for my property rights to penetrate into hefker territory, even if it's just on the tua, than it is into somebody else's property. I think that's what Rabbi Chanan is getting
here. But I guess maybe he's confused because like in general we view the mechanisms of transferring from out of hefker and transferring out of your bailus to be the same, like Mashiach, Hagba, like all those things. Like,
yeah,
I understand his confusion a little more.
It's not so obvious. And also, you know, Hefker is an interesting question. What Hefker is like a Hefker, sometimes like a negative commons where it's just like everyone has a Hofeldian liberty to use it, right? It's just like pure permission. Or is it, you think that it's like collective property in some way that it's, you know, it's where there's like a Nichseat Sibor in some sense. So, you know, I don't think it's obvious one way or the other, but I'm pointing out that Rabbi Chanan thinks there's an important distinction to be drawn between mixing your labor in Sadeh Hefker and mixing your labor in somebody else's karka. The Chazan Ish in Shviyas here has a really interesting observation. Anybody get a chance to read this Chazan Ish prepared before Chabura? I added a lot of Makoros in the 11th hour. Got very excited late last night. So the Chazon Ish here is really great Chazon Ish. He says the following. We're going to have two Chazon Ishes today. Hazareas de hefker chai b'maisros. Avenira divelo zacha ba'ayri. So it's not a case where you rakone the karka of hefker. De'i b'zacha b'sada ein zezareya b'sada hefker ala b'shalo. You know, cute little point, similar to Rabbi Chanan, that Zareas de hefker implies that hefker, it remains hefker, and the only ownership question is on the tevua. The afal gav de lo zacha besada, mikomakam hapero shelo. Okay. The lo dami le yored le sada chavero, vizara. De haperos le bal hasada, vuhu notel hotsa o kearis. So this is really interesting. He wants to know, basically, if we were to apply, why don't we apply the Zareya Sadeh Hefker rule to the case of Yored and say that the Yored actually owns the peros that he was mashbiach. You see, why don't we say that in the same way that if I plant a Hefker field, I own the actual fruits. So too, if I plant your field, I own the actual fruits. Now, by the way, to my mind, I don't know why the Chazanish rules out as such a clear cut matter that that the Yori doesn't own the fruits that he planted. No, the Chazanish just assumes. He says, "The payros are the baal hasada, but who notel hotza o kaaris?" Right, and he gets paid off either for his expenses or as a kind of shutef sharecropper. See, the Chazon Ish thinks those are like very different rules. A rule whereby the Zoreya owns the payros, right? He has like a property ownership over them. And a rule whereby he's entitled to be compensated for appreciating the value of the Sada, for his creation of the payros. To my mind, like, those don't have to be so far apart, you know? Like, the reason why he has to be paid off is because he has a certain bailus in the payros that he created.
But obviously, an aris wouldn't be chayven meiser on the produce that he creates. I don't think there's any hava, I mean, that there'd be a few meisers.
You're saying at least just as like this, you're saying there's clearly just some technical difference, right? In terms of chayven meiser, right?
Yeah, or like we said at the very beginning, could just be like, the reason you pay him is because of like it's an enrichment question.
Yes, for sure. I'm wondering, is the Chazanish thinking in those terms or in Gabe's terms? Is the Chazanish thinking like your raid's totally different because in your raid, the your raid has no bailus. All he has is a right to, you know, not have the bala bias enriched by his labor. Or is the Chazanish saying what Gabe seems to be saying, which is like, well, you know, maybe you're a shutef with the bailim. But the Chazanish is saying there's a difference between a shutfis where you have like a chelek in the actual payros, nafkamina, like whether you're chayiv in maiseros, and a shutfis where you just have an entitlement to be paid off, like just a financial interest rather than like an interest in rem, right? Like in the actual material thing. Gabe, right? Is that the...
Yeah, that's right. And I think like you can bring that back to Munkona Bishbachli. Rashi doesn't say you're actually Mulcher him Bishavach. It's Kimulcher Bishavach. I don't think we necessarily need to read Munkona Bishbachli as property, right? Rather than telling us something about the mechanism by which you're transferring back to Bishavach. I don't know.
Interesting. You're one of Lav Dafka, like all the exciting stuff here. But Gabe, even you would agree that Zareya Sadeh Hefker shows that you could get something really strong in Rem.
Yes, and I think that's why the Chazon Ish wants to draw a distinction here, because there's a chayv meiser, and that's surprising.
Got it. Okay, good.
Does anyone understand Yerushalmi is just saying lot? Like, it's just saying that when you're Zoreya Sadeh Hefker, that gives you ownership over the karka, and therefore, like, it's like lav dafka. It's like, I don't find this like this achronish reading of like, oh, it must be this. Like, or it's just telling you that one of the mechanisms through which you can acquire Sada is by being Zoreya.
That's right. If you want to take all the fun out of the sugya here and deflate everything, the deflationary move here, yes, is to do Gabe's thing in Uman Kone Bishvachkli and do Adin's thing in the Zoreya Sadeh Hefker and say, oh, it's just about how you get bailus on the karka. The other way, if you're interested in building up this like theory of labor mixing, then like, no, Uman Kone Bishvachkli is that the Mashbiach owns, you know, in Rem a certain amount of the chayfetz. In Zoreya Sadeh Hefker, like the Achronim all say, it's just in the Tvua because of your labor mixing. But look here at the Chazon Ish, the distinction that he draws. So I want to flag this point, this distinction between just notel hotza, just being paid off and having a property right in Rem, just having a right to be compensated and having a right in Rem, in the Hefta. I think. I'm just curious about how significant that distinction is. Okay. But then he says, Dahacha, the reason for this distinction is Bistay Hefgar Geshlo Rishus Lashameshba, Vishvacha Shal Apero Shalo Kimo Begidlo Ba'avir. So he thinks that, I think this is really fascinating. What explains the distinction between the cases is whether you have permission to have done the activity. So what do you make of that? It's if you have permission, so I guess the idea is like if there's no trespass, then your property right in rem could succeed. But if you don't have permission, then the most you could ever have is a right to be compensated. You can't like get a foothold in the actual stuff of somebody else across somebody else's property boundary. I think that's what the Chazanish is getting at here. Anybody have a thought on this? It's a very interesting distinction. He says, the Shtei Hefker case is different because Yesh Lo Rishus, it was permissible, right? It was okay for you to use it.
Was it, but in the case of, but a regular Kablan or something, or was it like question of like Yado, Kiyaba, bias, like a regular employee does generate some sort of like in rem, like property right.
Like a,
so this is specific to Yorade, just, yeah, it's just because Yorade is a unique thing of Yorade Shelo Bershus. Like that's like, that's the key thing here, but real, but like you're saying like, yeah, there's everywhere else there's real labor mixing or something like that.
Something like that. That's right. That's some, there's something about the non-permission here that blocks the in rem property cross boundary, the in rem boundary crossing. That's right.
I don't think there's enough to say that a normal kavlum has the proper rishus to be kona. There could be different kinds of rishus.
Okay, good. So good. So I think Adam's point, let me just tease out Adam's point a little bit. Is the issue here like the property, like you might think the issue is like the property crossing, the fact that it's somebody else's property, right? Like the Ritvas, like we saw the and we showed in the Ran earlier. Oh, because like Chatsero Shel Adam is Konelo. Once you go into somebody else's Rishus, like you're just dumping your labor effort into somebody else's Bailus, right? It's the Chazish doesn't say that. He doesn't say that the difference between the cases that one's hefker and one's somebody else's bailus, which I think was maybe what the Kovit Shurim was saying. Kovit Shurim was saying, right? L'chalik ben karka shel hefker, l'karka sheyesh lo bailum. The Chazon Ish interprets the distinction in terms of permission, which is different from saying like hefker is unowned and in somebody else's bailus, it's owned, you're competing with somebody else's property rights, right? He seems to focus on the permissibility of the action, which Adam, that's what you were getting at, right?
Right. But are you going to say then that according to Rav Elchanan, it's impossible for me to come along and plant in your field and own it, versus Chazon Ish that would say there is theoretically possibility that will allow you to do it?
That's right. Like, so a classic example would be like Yorade Bershus, which we'll talk about. Yorade right. Bershus, remember the Gemara Babasha says like a Baal Benichzei Ishto, a Shuta. We'll see other cases of Yorade Bershus. Like you have permission to be there, but it's not fully your property,
mm-hmm.
right? Or for whatever reason, it turns out that it's not your property, but you were allowed to be there. So you might say that's a nafkamina between these two different ways of distinguishing. On the Kovit Shiurim Bailus question, Yorade Bershus might lose his, would not have any in rem property claim because it's still somebody else's property, right? For the Chazon Ish, what matters seems to be whether you have permission, yesh lo rishus l'shamesh ba, and that seems to determine whether you could get this foothold in somebody else's property. Mm-hmm. Let's take, Gabe, you want to defer to Yakir, and then we'll get you, Gabe? So Yakir, Gabe, and then I'm Dan.
Yeah, it's just, I think that the, I think the line, kemo begadlu ba'avir in the Chazon Ish suggests that the fact that there's no competing property really is important to him. Maybe somehow the permission is a way of getting at that. Like once there's permission, then it doesn't make sense to him to talk about a competing property claim.
Yeah, Kier, you're listening to Tuska about like their chaim, how you could have, once you have Rishus, there can't be Gezel, right? Well, similar.
Yeah.
Structural argument.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, very interesting. I hear that. So you're saying maybe you could bring the Chazon Ish more in the Kovit Shurim camp by emphasizing Shvacha Shel Aperos Kimo Bigadla Ba'avir.
Yeah.
So the point there being if there's no competing issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. It's interesting. I like that. I like that suggestion. Anybody have thoughts on Yakir's suggestion before we go to Gabe? It's a nice reading. Gabe, you're next.
I guess I just want to ask if you could flesh out if you could flesh out the connection between Rucius and Bylus. Like, I would consider that as an option, but I have trouble figuring out why Rucius would create a
You had trouble figuring out why Rucius
would create a transfer of property, right? Those two concepts seem somewhat disconnected.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So
that's kind of what I wanted to say. I think it's like, it's very reasonable to say that, like, I can't the fact that I could generate a claim in your property against your will seems like that's a pretty, we've been talking about labor mixing, but it makes sense to say that my willingness to invite you into my property and invite the actual improvement you're making is it started at square one. It's my property, and for you to Baal Karthi assume property right in that is a pretty significant you probably said this is my American background speaking.
But yeah, right.
That's pretty significant.
Right. Good. Adin, did you get a chance to read the Porat piece that I emailed around?
Interesting. I did not, but I'll take a look at it.
Very Kedai to read. I'll mention a little bit here just to tease out this point. I think what Gabe and Adin are getting at is, well, what's the reason to think that it's the Rebbe Elchanan way, that it's the fact of it being somebody else's karka that blocks you from getting an in rem property hold, or saying the Chazon Ish way, that it's the fact that you had no right to be there, at least my formulation of the Chazon Ish, not Yakir's formulation of the Chazon Ish, the fact that you had no right to, you have no reshus to be there, that blocks your getting the in rem foothold in the karka, right? That's the question I did and Gabe, right? Right? So.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so I think the issue is, so what Porat points out is that the American way or the common law way of looking at things is that property boundaries are sacred. You know, it's nothing could ever explain one person getting a foothold in somebody else's property unless he was actually contracted, whatever. And even then, you're not going to get an in rem foothold. Of bylaws in somebody else's domain. And I think that's the Rebbe Elchanan formulation, right? It's what creates this immunity, the Hofeldian, if you're a property owner, you have a Hofeldian immunity. It's no one else has a power to transfer, to change your legal status with respect to your karka. That's what it means. Part of bylaws is that you have this immunity from change within your domain. It's your sphere of protected space, v'chule. And so it's the fact of ownership that gives you immunity to the yored and the mahana and the mashbiach, at least with respect to bylaws and rem. I think the Chazon Ish formulation says there's nothing about property boundaries that make you immune to somebody changing your normative position with respect to your property. It's the fact that you didn't grant them permission to be here, or something like that. It's the fact that they were wrongfully in your reshus. The fact that they had no right to be here, that gives you the immunity from they're changing your normative position, not the fact of the boundary, the property border itself. Does that make sense? Yes or no? So Porat's point, if you look at the Porat paper, he says in American law and common law, there's a lot of property boundaries are so strong that there's no such thing as a rightful trespass. All boundary crossings are considered wrongful. His point, maybe in a few exceptional cases, sure. But as a general rule, he thinks that in halakha, that's not true. There's no presumption against crossing somebody else's boundary or using somebody else's property. What matters is the specific way or the wrongful way that you use their property to their harm, to their detriment. And maybe that's why the Chazon Ish is, if you look at it that way, the Chazon Ish is emphasizing you know, did you have rishus to do this or no rishus to do this? It's not like the fact of bilus alone that grants the immunity. Cole, you have a thought on this?
I'm trying to think whether I agree with what you just said about the halakha's view of trespassing. So trespass isn't a tort in halakha in the sense that, right, loss is a tort. There is a discussion, I'm just repeating things that we discussed 2 years ago. There is a discussion in the Rishonim. I think the consensus view of the Rishonim, though, is trespass is not permitted. There is a view, I think, in the Rishonim that says that if the guy, basically, like, if you're not going to use that piece of land, then he won't gain any squatter's rights or anything like that, but you can't kick him off because of midas stone. So that is a view. So I guess in that sense, I agree with what you're saying. But the general view, I think the general consensus of the Rishonim, as I recall, is that like property owners are allowed to kick people off their land, which is to say, they may not have a remedy beyond expulsion, but that doesn't imply any kind of presumptive permission to trespass or to enter. We should be neutral.
It's interesting, yeah.
I do remember that extreme view in the Rishonim, but the fact that I remember it, I think testifies to its extremity.
We could read the Parat piece and talk more about this broader issue about the trespass. Very interesting.
All right, sounds good.
Mentioned in the past, I could send out this article also by Larissa Katz, where she like talks about like a lot of these like the Scandinavian countries, which have like these, they're like official rules that allow you to walk through other people's property and like pick some mushrooms along the way and stuff like that, and camp out in people's farms so long as you're not like interfering with their like privacy in some way, which like a sheepod is very different from like the American perception of things, right? It's like it has some technical term. But cool, you know, like the halakha seems to be much more in that direction than...
In which direction?
In that like Scandinavian, like doesn't seem like there's something just inherently wrongful with like walking into somebody's property in a harmless way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's even true in the United... Like, are you... Let me ask you this. In these Scandinavian cases, are owners not allowed to expel people from their...
That's the sense, right? If they're not...
To hang up no trespass. Let me ask you this. Can I build a really high impenetrable fence? Like, am I not only barred from expelling, but am right. I required to permit the...
Beyond my pay grade.
Entry? I just, like, in the United States, you know, I just, you know, like... I lived on a corner house growing up, so it was really easy for folks to like cut across our lawn. My mother would always go outside and yell at these kids, and maybe that's where I got it from. And I think the understanding was that she was in the right. Like in America, you are allowed the castle doctrine. Okay, yeah. In America is like really, I don't know, Shua. I'm sorry, is that, I don't know what the castle doctrine is. I think it's that like you get to tell people what to
do. I'm teaching about castle right now.
I thought castle doctrine has to do with like arms. Like
all right. Shua,
you have no duty. You have no duty.
Shua, can you say something?
I literally have never heard that term in my life, but
that's because you went to Yale where they don't teach you how to practice law.
Hey, I passed the bar and I'm very happy to tutor LSATs if anyone needs.
The castle doctrine is you have no duty to like be cornered or anything. Like once they're in your house, you can shoot.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. The castle doctrine is you don't have to leave your house if somebody is making a violent incursion. Right. You can stand your ground within your property.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't want to get dragged too much in this, direction here. So I want to now bring us to, with this background, I want to look at an interesting application within the sugya of Yored. Obviously, like what I'm going for is this argument that, can the paradigm of Umun Kona B'Shvach Kli and Zareya Sadeh Shel Hefker be applied to the Yored case? right, that the Yoreid is considered to have some sort of in-rem bilus in the Chatzer Chaveiro, and that explains why we view the Shevach as being in Shutfus, held in Shutfus, or jointly owned by the Yoreid and the Baal HaSadeh. So let's, and you know, this is a different paradigm from thinking of it in terms of just unjust enrichment, right? Like, oh, it's wrong for the Baal HaSadeh to benefit from the improvement of the Yoreid. This is like a stronger interpretation about there's intermingled property rights in the Sadeh, in the Shevach, that have to be now disentangled and sent back to their rightful holders. So interesting to warm us up to this discussion. I want to draw your attention to Rashi, as quoted by a lot of Rishonim. Rashi here on Kuf Aleph says, in the case of where there's Gilui Das, that the karka owner enjoyed or benefited from the improvement, Rashi says he gets Kishar Shas Leha Ir Kamina Gamadina, which seemed to be like the going rate for the labor service, right? A lot of Rishonim quote Rashi as saying, you see that goes, Maimonios quotes it, Pirish Rashi Kishar Arise Ha'ir, like the other sharecroppers of the town. Now, an aris is complicated because my understanding, an aris sometimes in halacha is viewed as a kind of shutta. Anybody here an expert on like sharecropper relationships in halacha? I mean, in some cases, an aris is viewed as a shutta who pays like a percentage of the, like he splits a percentage of the yield with the Baal HaKarka. Cole, looks like you were going to say something on this.
No, I'm sorry. I'm like distracted by the Republic. I apologize.
All right. Take a moment of silence for the Republic.
Take what, three.
Adam's dentist in the Five Towns there.
I don't know. I think I'm gonna send Eitan an apology note. I was probably out of line. Liad Stoller has persuaded me.
Okay. So some people take Rashi as saying Kishara Rise Ha'ir. Tosos doesn't like that because he says an aris is too strong. Like the poel, the yore can't be viewed as an aris. Virepirishanotel pachus me aris, lefisha aris kavua yoser. You know, an aris is like a different type of relationship. It's more permanent. He's like a tenant working your field. Tosos doesn't like the fact that we'll view this Yoreid as having this kind of interest, percentage interest in the karka. You can see Tosis in both. Basra quotes Rashi as citing Rashi. Rashi is saying, Kidin Ares. De Yoreid Shalo Bershush, Shaka Besada Asiolita, Kidin Ares. It's just very striking to me that this view of Rashi would treat a Yoreid as like this permanent kind of partnership. So hold that in the back of your mind, and I wanna push this idea a little further. And here's where we get into our fun discussion for today. So Cole, if you need us to entertain you by taking you away from your worries about the Republic,
I'm here.
Okay. What you were gonna say. So here's some pretty cool stuff. So you have Gemara Rosh Hashanah on your Gimel Amud Aleph, talks about how did Bnei Yisrael bring the Karban HaOmer when they just came into the land? Right? Pretty interesting question. They didn't own any of the Tua. The Gemara says, Im Tomar de Ayil Biyad Nachri, Kitzir Chem Amrachmana Velo Kitzir Nachri. They could not have brought the Omer from Tevua that was planted by non-Jews because Kitzir Nachri is not eligible for the Karban HaOmer. Everybody with me? Okay. So why is this interesting for our purposes? So it's interesting for our purposes because the Gemara assumes elsewhere, this is the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, that the non-Jews living in Eretz Yisrael could not have ossered the trees as Avodah Zarah because Eretz Yisrael is a Yerusha Lanu Me'avoseinu. Vein Adam Oser Davar Sheinu Shelo. Rashi here says, Everything that's attached in Eretz Yisrael, the Yerusha, the Yisrael, Mevoseyem, Shari La Avram, Namar, Kila Chanet, none of it, whatever. The Goyim Shebo Achri came Lo Yochlu La Asron. So, what you actually get here is this pretty interesting stira pointed out by Tosfos and other Rishonim. Now, on the one hand, the Gemara assumes, the Gemara of Odazar assumes that Eretz Yisrael was Bibaylos Yisrael, at least with respect to Ein Adam Oser Davar Shein Shalo, the non Jews can't Oser the trees. But on the other hand, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says that the Kitzir Nachri that was generated before Bnei Yisrael came into Eretz Yisrael is considered Kitzir Nachri. It's not considered the Bailos Yisrael. Everybody see the tension? Yeah? A little bit of tension? Meaning, is this considered to be Bailos Yisrael? Or is this considered to be the Bailos Nachri? With respect to Avodah Zarah trees, Asherei and Tisrikum Beish, the Gemara assumes that Eretz Yisrael is Bechezkas Yisrael. But with respect to the Tevua, the Gemara assumes that the stuff that the non-Jews grew there is considered Ksir Nachri. So Tosus points this out, and Tosus says the following. V'lo Ksir Nachri, v'af al gav di Yerusha hi lahem me'avoseihem, citing the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Blah, blah, blah. Nonetheless, the non-Jew has bailus, a chelek, something in the actual tevua that he produces. Whoa, so what's going on here? Pretty interesting suggestion, right? He's saying that there's something about the tevua produced by the Nachri that gives him a chelek in it, okay? Everybody with me on the Gemara? Okay, so the Chaz Nish here says, great Chaz Nish, cites Tosfos, Mikol Makom Yeshla B'Masha Zara, V'Efshar Shekavanasam, D'Yeshlahem B'Masha Natu U'B'Masha Zaru, Ke'aris, Kedin Yorei L'Tof Sada Chavero B'Sada Asuyolita. Pretty cool suggestion. He's saying that Maybe the way to conceptualize the relationship between the Yisrael and the Nachri in this Tevuah when they just came into Eretz Yisrael is the Chatzer, the Karka, belonged to Yisrael, but the Nachri was like a Yored who was Mashbiach Nichzei Yisrael. And what Tosos means when he says that the Nachri has Bailus is that, you know, they have this property interest through being Yored. And then he says, very interestingly, Osam shenatum acharkach, those things that the non-Jews planted in Eretz Yisrael could become aser bahana if they bowed down to it. Mishum shutfus didhu, because of their ownership interest in the netios that they planted. So very striking paradigm, right? The Chaz Nish says that the case of Eretz Yisrael before the case of Eretz Yisrael is like the case of a Yored. And he says the Yored has a kind of shutfus in the tvua that he grows in virtue of his labor investment. It's pretty great shita. I think it's like exactly what we're getting at.
This is completely inconsistent with Chaz Nish. Yeah, isn't it right?
Yeah,
unless he's saying that here there was Rishus because it belonged to him before. Like, yeah. Is that the...
It's a very good point. I think you're right. It's exactly in tension with the... Unless it supports Gabe's reading of the Chaz Nish before, that, you know, the Chaz... But even here, it seems like the difference between owning the actual thing and just having a monetary interest in the thing. Like,
isn't the Chaz Nish earlier was saying that it's the Rishus that's the problem. Here, where the non-Jew owned it before, that's probably more similar to a case of Yored Birshus, which we said could generate a property claim.
Yeah. Let's hold off on the Stira question, more just focus on like the content of this Chaz Nish. Right? So doesn't it sound very clearly he thinks the Yored has a kind of shutfus in what he's mashbiach and what he's mahane? Nafgamina for whether it's eligible for Omer, and also nafgamina for whether you know, the Moser Davar Shein or Shalom. If the Akum was Mashviach B'nechse Yisrael, he could answer it because of his Shutfus, though. Thoughts on this? Pretty cool Shita. Why is no one as excited as I'm excited?
Well, I leaving aside the steer question, I don't think we can prove from this Chazanish any further. I don't think we can prove this when it comes to Yored Shalom Rishus. Because this case seems more analogous to a Yored Rishus case, right?
Well, he cites our Gemara, Kedam Arba Mitzia Kuf Aleph of Yored Lito Sada Chavir Besada Asu Yolita, and our Gemara is a case of Yored Shalom Rishus. Our Bava also talks about Rishus. So at least Asada Asu Yolita, right? Which is, I think, significant in some sense. Let me hear their thoughts. So why is nobody else as excited as I am? Shul, why are you not as excited? Are you worried about the Republic also? Stop worrying about the Republic.
No, I'm cautiously optimistic about the Republic. I think that, I don't know if we have like a riot to the Slavonish, but also it's like a little, I guess it's kind of pressure, right? Like if everything that we've been saying for the last day and a half is true, then like, yeah, no kidding. You're there, Shutfin.
Right. I guess I spoiled it by like leading up to it. Yeah.
Yeah. I have. Sorry. I could act better, more surprised if you want.
Right. But I don't know. Like it's one thing to hear like my pushing for it. Something else to see the Chazanish saying it now.
I hear that. Yeah. Yeah. I'm more surprised at how much fealty you have to the Chazanish.
Right, it's true.
I think it's also it's good. I don't think it's what we're focusing on, but like this is making. I guess it, like if we want like earlier, I think it was Gabe or Adam wanted to connect, like the fact that the poel's Ochel Mishal Ba'abayis to Yored, like at least in the Rav Hirsch sense, that seemed to be limited to Jews. And here, like, this isn't, it's not like our Ravus that like, that is a primary factor in the relationship that you could, in the, like.
That's a good point. Yeah. That's a good point. This sounds just like the brute fact of the labor mixing and the Shevach, right? It's not like a Reacha consideration. Yeah, good point. Zachariah, are you excited by this?
I don't know. I'll be honest, I just saw these things now and share, so I'm still trying to piece them together.
Can't get excited by something that you're seeing now. So isn't that more exciting sometimes? No? No, Zachar, you don't hear that? Or you like need to premeditate on it for to be exciting for you?
Yeah, you don't wanna jump the gun.
Fair enough. All right. So let me just add a few. Take a look on your own at this Marami Rutenberg. You could discuss it pretty briefly. This is a famous Chadash issue. And he actually cites this Gemara about if something grows, Tvua Hagadela Biad Gai Eina Tzricha Hataras Omer, based on that Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. He actually thinks that there's some stira to the question, to the sugya of Yored. So it's worth just trying to figure out what the Marami Rutenberg is doing there. Let me close. How about this? I think we said enough for. I think we covered good ground for today. To get out the main point, for next Chabur, just take a quick look at this Marami Rutenberg, which is great. The Shit Oneg Yom Tov, the Nachal Yitzchak here. And this Chidushei Arim. What they're all doing is, I think they're all trying to get at this idea of, yes, there's some bailus, like Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli, maybe some bailus be'en that the Yored has in the Sadeh. So just like really reinforcing this theory that comes out of the Chazanish here. So take a look at these sources if you're for next Kabura. Then I'm going to do a quick survey of Yored Bershus versus Shalom Bershus versus Asu Yolita in Asu Yolita, just to give like a quick sketch of all the different permutations and why they're significant. Then we'll wrap up with this question of can, like the Baal Hasad essay, no improvements wanted here? Who has the burden of proof to say whether there are improvements, whether this was actually an improvement, things like that. All right, does that sound like a good plan? Yeah? All right, Shkayach, everyone. Thanks for participating. Kiri, you have a comment or?
Yeah, I just missed the last 5 minutes. So I was changing a diaper. What did we were in the middle of talking about Chazanish when I left. I just wanted to know what we got up to.
Yeah, I'll tell you. So I'll tell you here. Everyone else, feel free to hop off here. The Chazanish here, in Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah.
So did you get that Gemara?
Can you pull it back up? I just want to hear this again.
Oh yeah, sorry. So we have the Yakir, were you here for the Gemara Rosh Hashanah?
Yeah.
So the Gemara says that you can't bring Omer from Ketzir Nachri. And then when Bnei Yisrael came into Eretz Yisrael, all the Teruah was owned by Nachrim. Tosus points out that seems to contradict the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which thinks that Eretz Yisrael is a Yerushalayim Avoseihem. And that's why the non-Jews can't aser the Asherahs, because the trees belong to Bnei Yisrael, you know, the Moser, Dover, Shana, Shiloh, etc. You reconcile those. So, am I not sharing my screen? Sorry, here we go. Tosos asks this question, and he says, it's not Ketzir Nachri, Afagav, Yerushalayim, Avoseihem, Mikamakam, Yesh, Bemashe, Zara. Like the non-Jew still has a chelek in where he was mashpiach. See that, Yakir?
Yeah.
So the Chazanish explains this by saying that what Tosos means is that like the non-Jew has the status of like a yored whose mashpiach is like a aris, kiyored l'sada chavero p'sada suyalita, v'tilkach lo mikri kitzir. And that's enough because has a property right in what he's mashpia, that makes it no longer to Israel. And the Chazanish explained, when the Gemara says in them oser davar she'ino shelo, hainu ilano shel doros harishonim, shenevdu achar shenasna la'avram avinu, devahen ein la'akam shen shitfas. So, trees that, let's say, pre-existed the Havtacha to Abram, those were not considered to be the Bailos Akum at all, because the Akum has no chelek, though. But Osam Shenatu Acharkach, if the non-Jews planted trees in Eretz Yisrael on their own after the Havtacha to Abram, Ne'esaran Mishum Shitvos did too. Like trees that were planted by the Akum, those the Akum have a chelek in. They're like considered shutfin in the tree because a yored who's mashpiach is considered like a shutta. You see that here?
Yeah.
I thought that's like a really nice formulation of this idea of like yored having like bona fide property interests in the material that he's mashpiach.
Yeah, that is nice.
Yeah, it's good, right?
Nice find.
I needed you here because nobody else was as excited in seeing the Chazanish. It forced the excitement out of everyone. But it's cool. it really shows like the labor mixing that penetrates the property boundary.
Yeah.
I think Gabe's point from earlier on could have some implications for it, though. I'm still trying to play with it, but the idea of Kitzir Chem doesn't necessarily refer to property right. It also refer to issues of financial right.
Yes, exactly. I think that's a really good point. Meaning
it also works well with the previous Chazanish.
Yes, that's what I meant in response to Adin's point. Like the Chazanish doesn't have to be a steer on the Chazanish. Earlier the Chazanish said, let me just share my screen. I think you're totally right. Here we go. Earlier the Chazanish said in that first piece that the Yore doesn't have like let's see. The Afagav de Lozacha Basada Perishalo, Lodami Le Yored, who's just Nota the Hutzah. Right there, the Chazanish was saying, hey, the Yored just has a financial interest. He doesn't have like a right in rent. I think, Adam, you're possibly right here that if you want to reconcile these Chazanishes, in order to be Shutfin, it's sufficient to have a financial interest. You don't have to have like a right in rent. although I think that depends on what the stand, what's relevant for Ketir Chem and what's relevant for Inan Amos or Davar Shein or Shalom.
Mm-hmm. But like for your point, it'd be more interesting to have an in rem argument.
Correct. 100%. Yeah. 100%.
A more fun.
It would be more fun. The language of Shutfus is very strong. Right? I think that's like that the Chazanish uses.
Right.
Yeah. All right, good. So we're going to pick up at this beginning of next week. Sound good?
Fantastic.
All right. Yashar Koch, everyone. See you on Tuesday.